The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome, welcome to Happy Hour. And I'm going to continue on this theme of the inner critic. I'm going to just keep on talking about this a little bit. This inner critic, you know, there's so many different ways we might describe it, but it's this, sometimes, you know, a voice or some personality, I don't know. It's this aspect of ourselves that puts us down, beats us up in some kind of way, and has this kind of harshness quality to it as opposed to being just supportive and warm. And when this inner critic's voice, when it's loud or when it's sharp or rampant or something like this, it affects us. And it's hard to keep this sense of self-worth, or we start to feel like, oh, you know, maybe there is something wrong with me. Or not, maybe I shouldn't even say, maybe there's something wrong with me. Often when the inner critic is loud, we have this idea, there is something wrong with me. Or maybe it shows up as this feeling like, my life doesn't have meaning, my life doesn't have purpose. It kind of shows up in that kind of way. It might be another way in which it shows up. And something that compounds or augments or exacerbates some of the difficulty of this inner critic, if somehow we have this idea that everybody else seems like they have it together, but we're the ones that somehow don't quite measure up in some kind of way. If we think that we are unusual to have this inner critic, or maybe to have this pervasive inner critic. And I think I've shared this story before, but for me, when I was training to be a Dharma teacher, part of the training is to just sit in as an observer when other Dharma teachers are in practice discussions with some of the students. And I had no idea. I really was quite something for me to see how many people in like countless different ways, but this theme of not feeling good enough or feeling like something's wrong or something like this was so prevalent in people's practice discussion. So when they're talking about their practice, but also when they're talking about their life, and it had a big impact on me really to recognize this, that how prevalent this was. Right before, I really had no idea. I thought, you know, that my inner critic was just because I deserved it or something like this, instead of recognizing that this is a kind of a cultural phenomenon. And the fact that we don't talk about it, we tend to think it's only us. So something that can be have a big shift, a big impact, is just as I described, to realize that we're not the only ones. And maybe we can even help each other. We can help others just by recognizing that we share this similar burden, or that we also have this inner critic, or kind of might be a way that can have some intimacy or some connection with people. I'm not saying you have to say this to everybody in all conversations, but there might be some relationships, some conversations in which it could be helpful and supportive, both for yourself and for the other person. So it can be an act of caring. It can be an act of compassion. Maybe you recognize that this other person is doing that, and to help them see that they're not the only one. And of course, we don't want to like give advice to people if they're not asking for it. And we don't need to tell people what to do. I know what your problem is. You have this inner critic and blah, 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 right? Nobody wants to hear that. Like, we don't want to hear it, right? So, but I think it might be helpful, or something I invite you to do outside of meditation, is as you go about your life and the conversations that you have, or if you're on social media, the things that people post or don't post, Is there a way in which you can see the critic operating in people's lives? Maybe they're not using that language. Maybe it's not explicit, but just recognize that other people have this too. And for me, I had I have this memory of something that was had a big impact on me also is I had a work colleague who was difficult to work with and kind of an unpleasant person to work with. And this person was really pompous and arrogant. And even though this person had made a number of mistakes, they were blaming everybody else. And we're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, is this really happening? That they're blaming somebody else when this was clearly their, you know, the mistake that they had made. And yeah, so, and another colleague of mine who reminded me, oh, you know, this person is super sensitive. That when I've had to train them to do something, that person was so sensitive that everything they didn't know. And then that reminded me, oh yeah, some people, this inner critic is really loud. And they try to cover it up or make it go away by overcompensating. So sometimes when we see this arrogance or this pompousness or something like this, this is really somebody who has this active inner critic and they're trying to hide it and they're overcorrecting. So just a encouragement that to recognize that so many people have this. I'm not saying everybody does, but an astonishing number of people do. And maybe it would be helpful to, outside of meditation, to just notice, oh yeah, maybe that's somebody's little inner critic coming on, getting expressed. Or maybe you share a little bit or bring this up or something with others. And, you know, you are the best guide of your own life and the settings and when that might be appropriate or not appropriate. And even if you don't do any of those things, you can just take it from me to recognize that a lot of people have this inner critic alive and well in them. So what can we do about it? And the part of it is this practice that we're doing is helping the mind and the heart soften. And maybe have some warmth or some compassion. And so that the inner critic can just, you know, quiet down. We don't have to get rid of it. We don't have to have ill will towards the inner critic. We're just gonna let it kind of just not be so authoritative. And that's how these things work. It just stops being having such a powerful role in our lives. And it might be that, you know, it becomes really persuasive and then it's not, and then it is and then it's not, but we're just helping to create the conditions in which it's less persuasive. Okay, so with that as an introduction, we'll do some practice. For those of you who've been here for these past few weeks when I've been teaching, we'll do much of the same. You guys know that I kind of like, so there's something about rhythm and repetition that really helps things kind of sink in. So we'll be doing some of that today. So taking a meditation posture, one that expresses your intention to meditate and also has some ease and no reason to be uncomfortable. Is there a way to have some alertness, some uprightness, either literally or figuratively, that's also relaxed? And feeling into the body. That's in this alert but relaxed posture. How does it feel? What are some of the bodily sensations? Tuning into the experience of having a body this moment. And to rest the attention on the sensations of breathing. This body is breathing. What does that feel like? Is there a way that we can meditate without an inner critic or without letting the inner critic be persuasive? So just gently and with warmth, when our mind wanders, we just begin again, come back to the sensations of breathing. And then to begin our loving kindness practice, starting where it's easy and complicated, with a being that's lovable. This might be an imaginary being. It might be somebody who's in your life you have a relationship with. Or it might be somebody who has touched you with their teachings or writings, or maybe somebody for when you were a child or that supported you, whomever. I think the key is here for it to be uncomplicated and simple. You want to create the conditions in which the heart and mind can relax and feel some warmth. So bringing this lovable being to mind. Connecting with them. And then to support this connection and this cultivation of warm-heartedness, we can repeat these phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. Connecting with this lovable being, sending some well wishes. And then to expand this loving kindness to ourselves. Of course, we include ourselves. Why wouldn't we? So bringing to mind either an image of yourself or tuning into the felt experience in this moment. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Checking in with the body. Is there any sense of warmth or openness or spaciousness that can be a support for this cultivation of warm-heartedness? And then to support our working with the inner critic, maybe as a counterbalance to the persuasive quality of the inner critic, we can practice some alternative ways of meeting difficulties or meeting experiences in our life. So building on this warm-heartedness, this care, respect, kindness, love that we've been cultivating. Bring to mind a minor difficulty that you have in your life. On a scale of 1 to 10, this is something like a 2 or a 3. And feel this difficulty or connect with it in some kind of way. And I'll offer a few phrases that you can say. You don't have to do all of them. Maybe only one of them resonates. I'm doing the best I can right now. I'm doing the best I can right now. I'm in the process of learning new ways, and this takes time. I'm in the process of learning new ways, and this takes time. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. I'm doing the best I can right now. I'm in the process of learning new ways, and this takes time. May this difficulty be held with kindness and ease. So this idea of the inner critic, and turns out that so many people have this, and just recognizing that we're not the only ones, be a way in which can support some closeness with some other people, or maybe we might rethink some of our evaluations of other people. I give the story of somebody that I worked with that was like so arrogant, I couldn't believe it. But then somebody else saying, you know, this person is really sensitive. And then when I started kind of reframed the way that I thought about them, like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay, now I can see it. That would explain why this, that, and the other thing. So just this recognition that it's prevalent, and maybe there's a way in which this makes us, I don't know, supports our growth or our ease, because this idea that, oh, we're the only ones and nobody else has this just adds on to this idea of the inner critic. Then we're taking it personally in some kind of way. So now I'd like to create the conditions in which you can talk about this amongst yourselves. And I'm going to create some breakout rooms where you can go into and talk about some of these ideas about the inner critic and not being the only one. I don't want to say that everybody has it, of course, but it's something that so many of us share. So it can be helpful just to say one thing and then go to the next thing, and then they say one thing and then go to the next thing and they say one thing. So in this way, everybody has a chance to say something. And you might just make a comment about this idea that it's prevalent and a lot of people have it, and maybe how that makes you feel to recognize that other people have it. You don't have to talk about your deep, dark secrets, and you don't have to give advice, but instead we've been practicing some loving kindness and being with difficulties, and now's an opportunity to practice in a different way, you know, with others. You also have this intention of cultivating warmth and loving kindness. So if it's helpful, you can go in the order, in alphabetical order. So here we go. Okay, so welcome back. Does anybody have some comments or questions or something they'd like to share? How was it in the breakout groups, or this idea that you're not the only one? If you do have this inner critic. I don't want to presume everybody does. Yes, Neil.
I definitely do, in case anyone's wondering. So I do not recall running into phrases like inner critic in any Buddhist literature.
That's right.
Is it a new thing? Is it the concept, right? Did people have it? I mean, certainly doubt, you know, which is one of the five hindrances, seems to be very closely related. So did they just not use the term?
Yeah, this is a good question. And I love where you're going with this, Neil. I would say probably doubt, because doubt can be doubt about one's capacities to, you know, do this practice or something. I will say this. So this is just my own personal idea, is that just for me, those people that I know well that don't have inner critics were not born in America. I'll just say that. So that just makes me think like, well, maybe back then they didn't have it. Maybe there's something about our culture. So that's just limited to Diana's experience, people that I know and stuff like that. So I've made that observation. So maybe they didn't have it back then.
Thanks.
And one way we could think about how it is in the Buddhist teachings is about compassion for oneself. That's what I'm, you know, we're using different language, but that's what it's about, compassion for ourselves. Yes, so Wayne.
You know, actually just touching on what Neil mentioned that I wasn't intending to, but if you look at the work of Hamid Ali, whose pen name is A.H. Almas, and the Ridwan school, he goes very far. The inner critic is a big part of that work. I don't know if it means it's kind of related to Sufism or something like that. although his stuff is the culmination of many things.
Thank you. Go on.
I was just going to say how I, just in speaking with the person I was speaking with, like I when we started talking, I couldn't really relate to being in touch with my inner critic. And then, boy, she's brought up something and it brought it. And I just realized, holy cow, that's where my inner critic really gets me. And so it was nice to, once I touch into another part of my life, I realized, whoops, that's where it is.
Yeah, right. Doesn't mean that it's active all the time, or maybe just be a little area of our life. Yeah. Thank you, Wayne. And thank you for saying that about Olmos, H.H. Olmos. I forgot, or I shouldn't say I forgot. I never knew that. I don't know that tradition very well, but so thank you for saying that. I know a number of people practice in that tradition. Kathleen.
Thank you. I remember when the word conceit was explained to me, the difference, the way that it's used in our everyday language. And it's either that I'm above, below, or equal to anybody else. And no, I managed pretty much have the negative one. And it's just interesting that it's a source of suffering. And I think that pretty much describes it for me. It's just a form of conceit.
Thank you. That's really great. I love that. Thank you for saying that. Right? The comparing mind, no matter where we come up with this comparison, is always a source of dukkha, always a source of suffering. Yeah. And we could say maybe the inner critic is there. Yeah, gets activated. Thank you. Thank you for kind of tying it in. Trudy, yes. I sent something to that says ask to unmute. So maybe there's something. I know that your vision is not great. See if I can help you get unmuted. Yeah. Yeah, I don't have that. There used to be a time, but Zoom doesn't allow that anymore. So I can't unmute you. Okay. Well. So Trudy, are you speaking? I can't see your mouth because I have your name right there.
Does that work?
No? Yes, that works.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying as I get older and older, I'm starting to laugh at my inner critic, just chuckle. And that feels good.
Nice. Yeah. Thank you, Trudy. Just fantastic. So we're at the top of the hour, but I'm happy to stay and maybe answer some more. So if you'd like to go, you're welcome to go. But if you'd like to stay, maybe we can hear from Sam. Sam, I am.
Green eggs and ham. Thank you. I have to let you know that I'm new at this, so bear with me a bit. But I wanted to share that I'm beginning to recognize more and more of my tendency to be judgmental about myself and what I'm going through. And I've noticed that I tend to, I've always been a person that was paid a lot of attention to detail. Very detail oriented, and I always would be critical in some respects regarding that in terms of calling myself a perfectionist. So I'm not so sure what the distinction is, if there is any, between calling myself a perfectionist and or someone who pays attention to detail. And I get confused at times to knowing, well, is this attention to detail healthy, wholesome, or is it more of the tendency to be perfectionism and thus hard on myself for being so, unsure or driven to overcompensate even possibly.
Yeah.
How can I work with that.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. I think this this question is a good question, like just attention to detail versus perfectionism. And I think being a perfectionist, we use that label and words, that when it gets in the way, when this attention to detail gets in the way of our doing something new, when something doesn't turn out, or if something about ourselves doesn't turn out the way that we're expecting, like maybe I'm just making this up, our skin or hair or, you know, something, just an appearance or the way that we do something, maybe that didn't sound quite right or something like that. So when we tend to not do things because we know we're going to beat ourselves up if it's not perfect, then that's maybe what we would call perfectionism, this way in which it gets in our, hinders us, or gets in the way of our living a bigger, best life.
Yeah, I resonate with that tendency to be fearful of making mistakes.
Yeah.
And then I would stifle myself. But there were often times when I would just try to override that. And then frustration would come up, and then I would get more critical, and it just snowballed.
Yeah. So exactly this practice that we're doing is a way to work with that. This kind of softness, this warmth, this loving kindness, care, is, we're not saying that perfectionism doesn't have to be there. We're not saying that the inner critic can't be there. We're just saying that, well, here's an alternative way. We're kind of like shifting our relationship to it. We're kind of like bringing it to the forefront and recognizing it. And then we're meeting it or holding it, we might even say, with kindness and ease, right? The inner critic itself could be something that's getting held with kindness and ease. And this can be really impactful, right? Really make a big difference in people's lives.
Should I just not train my actions with that term? Perfectionism? And just stay away from that? That seems awful loaded, as I'm beginning to gather, and it's charged.
If it's charged for you, well, all that matters really is if it's charged for you, rather. So if it's a subtle way of putting yourself down, like, oh, okay, I'm too much of a perfectionist, you know, something like that, then maybe there's another way you could work with that.
Yes, letting it be. What arises is probably a big part of that process of recognition that I'm yet to really be able to incorporate. Yeah, allowing it. There's just that something is resistive.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you. Diana.
That's, to me, it's a wonderful subject someone brought up about the term inner critic in relation to Buddhism and that terminology. And for me, for ever since you started this series, I started to relate the inner critic term to early karmic conditioning for me, because that's where I learned it. I mean, I could tell it just didn't pop up 4 months ago or something. It's been there. And I have the last year or two really been more involved with my early conditioning and beginning to see it and work with it, which is difficult once you're facing things and really seeing and learning to allow but absolve myself of responsibility for certain things. But that's where my inner critic just, you know, it's just right there, boom, 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 from family and from circumstance. People don't know what they're saying to you. And, you know, you learn that something's not good enough right off the bat as you go along. It's almost like a conditioning thing.
Yeah.
That's my response. It's not a Buddhist term specifically, but I think it's part of the karmic
conditioning. Thank you. Thank you. This idea of conditioning, right? Then just as you said, it's not spontaneously arisen. It's here for a reason. We don't actually know exactly. We don't have to know, but we might know. Maybe, you know, we're exactly like our parents or how our parents were, you know, something like that. So thank you. Thank you, Diana. Okay. So maybe I'll see if I can come up with some Pali words to do with inner critic. I know that Pali for internal and critic, I don't know. Well, maybe I'll cook up something so we can have our own words for this. Okay. So it's a delight to practice with you guys. If you'd like to unmute, maybe we can say goodbye all together now. So bye-bye and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Greg.
Diana.
Thanks.
Good night,
Mike.
Thanks, Neil.
Thank you, Judy.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.